Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Roasting 200 years of corporate constitutional rights, 1819 to 2019, notes the anniversary of the first U.S. Supreme Court decision granting constitutional rights to business corporations. The event features a photography exhibit, trivia, conversation, and presentations about how we can reclaim people's constitutional rights and dismantle corporate rights. Again, that's Roasting 200 Years of Corporate Constitutional Rights on Thursday, February 28th from 6 to 9 p.m. This is a drop-in event happening at the Just Bob Cafe, 2403 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, your parte chino. Check it out. Listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, this is Patrice Rushen, and whenever I'm in the Bay Area and I need good information and great radio, it's all about Hard Knock Radio.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Over the last 30 years, obesity rates have increased significantly among American adults. There are significant racial and ethnic disparities in obesity prevalence rates, with African Americans being more likely to be obese compared to other ethnic groups. Up next, joining us by phone to discuss obesity in the African American community is Dr. Rameek Hunt, board certified both in internal medicine and obesity medicine. He's a New York Times bestselling author who has penned three books, The Pact, We Beat the Street, and The Bond. Dr. Rameek Hunt, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I want to first thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And I really wanted to have you discuss obesity in the African American community. However, I think the conversation overall will be beneficial to all Americans because it's not really that specific when we're thinking about the things that make one gain weight and lose weight and how to go about, you know, having this healthy lifestyle based on the foods that we're digesting. But before we focus on that and the conversation around medical weight management and the work that you do, for our listeners that may not be familiar with the Pact, briefly explain your story in relation to the book, The Pact, and the three doctors.
So me and my two friends, we grew up as childhood friends in Newark, New Jersey, and it was rough growing up, and we made a pact in high school to become doctors. So we went to junior high school together, high school together, we made our pact, and we just stuck together. We went to college together, we went to medical and dental school together, and once we graduated, we decided to start giving back to the community. We started the Three Doctors Foundation, and we wrote our book, The Pact, because we wanted young people to know no matter what your obstacles, you can make it. And all the things that we had been through, you know, growing up in single-parent homes, parents on drugs, getting arrested, all these different things that happened to us, you know, most people would think, well, you know, I can't be a doctor. And we wanted to let people know that that's not true. The power of friendship is very powerful. And even though you have really tough odds, you can overcome them. And we wanted to just be an inspiration to people. We knew a lot of the things that we were sharing might have been a little embarrassing for us, especially as new doctors, especially as new African-American doctors. But, God put it on our heart to put the book out. And it really was received really well, and people understood it. And, you know, it's required reading across the country and even across the world. So we're just very fortunate. We travel. We do a lot of stuff with our foundation, and we go to schools and different things like that because it's our mission and our passion. So that's kind of, and then we wrote a children's version of the book, and then We wrote a book about fatherlessness and reconnecting with your fathers called The Bond, because that a lot of that is, you know, unfortunately prevalent in our communities as well. And that book was important. That probably was the most personal book for me, because my father passed away not too long ago. And so to be able to write a book with him, because we wrote the books, we wrote that book together with our fathers as we reconnected with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely think your story is inspiring. And, you know, I remember when I first became familiar with The Pact and then later on The Bond, for some reason I didn't get a chance to check out We Beat the Street. But, you know, I just think that your story is remarkable. And going back to the original reason why we wanted to have you on the program, as I said in the introduction, this conversation, there's significant racial and ethnic disparities in obesity prevalence rates, with African Americans being more likely to be obese compared to other ethnic groups. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, African American women have the highest rates of being overweight or obese compared to other groups in the U.S. About 4 out of 5 African American women are overweight and obese. In 2015, African Americans were 1.4 times as likely to be obese as non-Hispanic whites. In 2011 through 2014, African-American girls were 50% more likely to be overweight than non-Hispanic girls. Dr. Hunt, what are the leading factors that has led to this widespread obesity in the African-American community? Is it simply the lack of or the prevalence of food deserts that exist in our communities, or is it much more than that?
That definitely plays a big, huge part of it. But it is a lot of things. In particular, the foods that we eat are particularly fattening. And what we don't understand, or what doesn't get across, is that we make the word fat synonymous with fat or obesity. And the truth is, what is making obesity worse in our community is primarily carbohydrates, and particularly refined carbohydrates. Because if you look at how carbohydrates are metabolized, it literally turns into fat, because you raise your insulin levels, and it's called fuel partitioning. So some of that energy is being used as calories, as energy, but then some of it is being partitioned and going into storage. I give a talk, and I put a picture up of when you see those pictures when people are starving in third world countries, and you see them having very thin, bony arms and legs, but then they have a big belly. That belly is not fluid. Some of it is, but it's a lot of fat in their abdomen. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because they're poor, they can only afford to eat grains and refined carbohydrates. They don't get meat and proteins and different things like that. And they get a beer belly, basically. I mean, that is what a beer belly is, because beer is full of carbs. And when people get these big bellies, it is because of carbohydrates. And so the reason over the last 50 years that we haven't been losing weight, even though we said we should decrease the fat by at least 10%, so the fat should be going down to less than 30%. We have done that. However, obesity rates continue to climb, and that is because our carbohydrates increase to 50 to 60%. So there's more diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and there's more obesity, and it continues to grow year after year after year. And if we don't do something about it, we will 100% of this population will be obese in the next coming decade or two.
And also, where does refined sugars fit into that? And then maybe backing up just a little bit, what causes obesity? Because you mentioned also insulin.
Yes, yes. So when I say carbohydrates, I mean, and I should have clarified that, I mean sugars and refined carbohydrates in particular. Complex carbohydrates are not as fattening. So what causes obesity is there's what we call, it's obviously multifactorial. There are a lot of things that contribute to obesity. So there's genetics, there is environmental factors, there are medications. There are medications that I give people, I don't anymore because I know better now because I've been trained, but there are medications that my colleagues give people with good intention, but that medicine alone can cause obesity. There are, like I said, environmental factors. We live in environments where it's not conducive to move. And then there are the foods that we eat. and that caused obesity. And so when you put all those things together, you get a milieu, if you will, like a just an environment to produce obesity. And so when you eat, so obesity has the biggest contributor to obesity is what foods or drinks you put in your mouth.
Okay.
And so again, when you put a lot of carbohydrates in your body, that increases your insulin. So carbohydrates, and particularly sugars and refined carbohydrates, spike your insulin level. And when your insulin level is spiked, it literally locks your fat cells so that you cannot get energy out of the fat cell. And then it drives the carbohydrates you ate into the fat cell to produce more fat.
Wow.
And so it's not only a hormone game, but it's mostly a hormone game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about insulin levels. It's about this other hormone called ghrelin.
Check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, your parte chino. Check it out.
Right. We're going to turn you into a feminist. It is the song called Turn You. It is from our guest, no stranger to our airwaves, no stranger to the Bay Area. It is the one and only Rocky Riviera.
Riviera.
It's actually Rocky Rivera. We were joking off air about butchering names, but it's Rocky Rivera. Born and raised a product of San Francisco.
Yes, correct.
And a journalist, an educator, and an artist, and a dope MC who has just put out, is this your sixth album?
No, it might be like my sixth project, but it's my third studio album. I have a couple of mixtapes, and okay. I do a whole series with DJ Rosa, the Rock and Rose series. So, third studio album.
So, this song that we just played, Turn You Into Feminist, that's kind of like an anthem for you. Did you know that it was going to take off the way that it did?
Actually, when we were performing it at the Beat Rock Music 5-year anniversary tour in 2015, we were playing around with the set list and we were performing it, and just the rhythm of that song, the way it ends, you know, the proclamation that everybody in this room is going to be a feminist when I'm done with you, it went over really well. So it just ended up being the set ender, the one that was like the encore presentation. Right. So it was not only a good song, it was not only a video that I shot with your students at San Francisco State
That's
University.
Right.
Shout out.
Yep.
Yes, that came out, and they were able to turn it in as their final project in your class. So this was a really cool video that three students of Davey D's at San Francisco State, they did the video. And then it also got me an East Bay Express Award, I guess, for Best Feminist Anthem, which is funny because there aren't many out there.
Right.
But I'll take it. But yeah, it's just a fun song to do. It's something that I performed at that show that we just recently did with Talib Kweli. So.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because the song came out just before the popularity, and I'm saying the word the popularity because
right.
Tarana Burke had a Me Too movement
yes.
for a good 10 years, but the main public didn't really become aware of it until maybe a couple of years ago. But this song kind of predates that national understanding of it. But I can only imagine with, you know, with folks kind of hyper-focused on that, you know, what's been the reaction to that song? And I'm asking because sometimes I can see hostility. There's been times since people like, you ain't turning me into no damn feminist. I'm not going to be one, you know.
Right.
Have you had that sort of kickback?
Well, you know, I think that when I first did the song in 2015, I really didn't foresee the Me Too movement happening, but I knew that it was coming. Mm-hmm. Every woman in hip hop knew that there was a reckoning that there was to be had.
Mm-hmm.
Every woman in every industry knew that we were tired of really sacrificing our art because there were these gatekeepers in these positions of power that either didn't take our art seriously or just really were really about that sexual harassment life, like as a normalized behavior towards women in the arts. So when I dropped that, it is aggressive. It's, you know, it's not like I'm going to make you think about turning into. It basically is telling you that if you believe that women are powerful and can contribute and, you know, it shouldn't be so complicated. I know we have a lot of knee-jerk reaction to the feminist movement and particularly white feminism, which I address in this album. But I really wanted people to not be afraid of that word.
Right.
Including the people in my own community that were afraid to say they were feminists, including men who think that only feminists can be women, which
right,
that's
right.
not true at all.
Because you said you're going to turn everybody
I'm turning everybody in this room
so
into
you know,
a feminist.
So, you know, I'm listening to this when the first time I heard that song, right? I'm thinking because we know your other half, you know,
yes.
Mr. Bamboo.
Yes, correct.
You know, and I'm sitting there like, I was wondering, did you like, did you talk to him that way when you all first met? Did you like have to like use yes, sir, no, sir? Did you like have to set him in a path, or was this just like, you know, you're just writing just to be writing? Because for some reason, I picture him. When you're writing, when I hear the song, and I'm like, damn, did she go at him like that?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be with a person that wasn't a feminist or a feminist in the making.
Okay.
And I think that there are ways that we can all be more feminist. Like,
thanks.
I believe that, you know, I read that book, Bad Feminist by Roxane Gay, and I considered myself a bad feminist for a long time because I said the B word and I would call my friends bees, and you know, like there was a lot of contradiction within me that didn't allow me to embrace that title because I felt like there was a gold standard and other people held me to a gold standard.
Right.
But in terms of my partner, you don't ever want to get into an argument with the feminist, especially if that person is your partner, because they're gonna throw all sorts of bell hooks books at you in theory and but in reality, you know, you have to really be in partnership. Right. Not just, you have to really understand where you are in the spectrum of feminism and really apply that kind of empathy and help guide your partner. So he wasn't a full-fledged feminist, I'm sure, when I first met him, but who was? I wasn't.
Right,
so
right.
He was committed to that. And at the end of the day, when I put a really dope verse down, he loved it. He loved me being in the spotlight. And so I knew that there would not be a problem with right. our relationship, because he really was my champion, my number one champion.
Okay.
So it wasn't direct. It so wasn't no diss track.
You know, nowadays everybody kind of hyper looks at the
the
lyrics,
God.
And they're like,
Yeah, oh,
let's
gosh.
See. You said 49er. Are you talking about Jay Ryan?
Right,
or are you
right.
talking to, you know?
Sometimes it's not that deep, and sometimes you go, you know what I mean? You're doing
right.
too much.
Because I remember before, there was somebody who listened to Ice Cube's famous song, mm-hmm. Today Was a Good Day.
Right, right.
And they did all the research. They did, you know, it took them like a week to try to pin down
what day it was.
What day
right?
it was. And, you know, Cube is like, well, no, it's just Wednesday. I
yeah.
just happened to
yeah.
just wrote some rhymes, but
exactly.
somebody went all the way in. So, okay, so, all right. So we got that out to
yeah.
Rocky Rivera in the building. This new album is very interesting in a number of ways. First, you have very interesting art on
yes.
the front, so I'm going to let
yes.
you explain the art.
Oh, yes.
Because we often don't get a chance to see the art, but I think the art is a good part of the album.
Right,
you know, because we download and we stream, so.
Right.
Then you had promo pictures.
Yes, correct.
So you had just become a new mom.
Oh,
yes.
Yes,
so
yes.
there was a statement being made about
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
And then, of course, at this point, you are going beyond the apprehensions that some people have had. I just was looking at a post, you know, with somebody, and they were like, well, you know, revolutionary rap doesn't pay the bills, so therefore we got to do other things. But you ain't rhyming for the sake of riddling.
Right,
you
right.
You know, you got messages in your songs.
Yes,
so
yes.
Let's talk about Rocky's Revenge, and we'll start off with the artwork in case people don't see it. But what is this about?
Well, the
Let's
art.
Let's describe it.
Yes. So the artwork is an image of me interpreted by the artist. And please excuse me for butchering your last name, homegirl. Fung Hun Hoi. She is a good friend of mine now, but she actually found me through the song I did with Ruby Ibarra, and she did a quick download of all my music, reached out to
You're
me.
You're talking about the song Us.
Yes, the
that,
song
That was
Us.
A classic song. We'll play that in a little bit.
Yes, yeah. exactly. So she found me, and she found all my music, which is what a lot of people do when they realize that I've made music in the past. And she reached out, and she just felt such a strong connection with my music that she, off the strength, was like, I want to work with you, I want to make art with you, and I don't want to charge you anything for it because I'm in solidarity with your message. It's gotten me through some really hard times. And so it was in my inbox for a while. I didn't even notice it. And then when I peeped it, I went on her page. And this woman is an accomplished artist. She's an art professor at a community college down in Los Angeles. She used to do illustrations for Rolling Stone magazine. She is so amazing. So when we collaborated, we went over a lot of themes that I wanted to talk about. And really, when she heard the album, she came up with the idea of interpreting it through the Hindu deity Kali
mm-hmm.
Ma,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, the destroyer of illusions, a demon slayer, the mother of creation, and me just having had my daughter in May and having the album drop in October. There was a lot of creation happening, a lot of album
right.
dropping, a lot of creativity, a lot of frustration with motherhood and how that comes into play, and seeing Cardi B go through her stuff.
Right, because Cardi B was pregnant
yes,
and performing.
It was a very fertile year, 2018.
Yeah. Right.
Very fertile year, but it was also my statement to really say that, you know, I have something to contribute. I'm dropping this album and I'm dropping this baby in the same year. Nobody can stop me, and I'm going to address a lot of things that people are still afraid to talk about. And so when you think of a fearless deity, when you think of somebody that represents not just the protective nature of this deity, but also the fact that, you know, she births creation. Right. It was the perfect kind of collaboration between her and I. And so once she made that artwork, I knew that the album was complete. And it's really been the thing that stood out the most in terms of people that see it.
Yeah, I think you have to see the artwork to get it. But what stood out to me, just knowing that you are revolutionary in terms of your lyrics. You got like a sword, a Molotov cocktail. You got a whole bunch of weapons. Right. This deity has that. So it seems like she's ready to battle.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
she got something. And you got a bunch of cut off heads.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So this is not one of the deities that's a benevolent goddess that had, you know, a baby through immaculate conception. This is a woman and a demon slayer who really... even the deeper meanings of the sword represents pursuit of higher knowledge. The head, the severed head, represents death of ego. And in this particular case, it's very reminiscent of a certain Proud Boy that has been making his rounds.
Oh, that's who that is.
I wouldn't say exactly it's him because I don't want to give anybody no press. But what I will say, the idea of white supremacy, especially around this time, it was very symbolic for me.
Right.
So I wanted people to interpret it without actually telling them outright, this is what this is.
Right.
But I was able to replace some of the instruments of power and also weapons with some of my indigenous weapons from the Philippines, and actually call a name to the things that I was criticizing in this record and be very specific, because that's the kind of person I am. I'm a journalist, you know. I'm not doing this general type of spraying the entire, you know. I'm like, look, my targets are true and my aim is true. So I really want to attack those things while at the same time reminding you that, yes, I'm a mom. Yes, I just had my daughter, and that these things are possible.
Right. Now, on this album, you have Jazz Mafia participating.
Yes,
with you.
Yes.
So it just ain't samples. You went and got some musicians.
Oh, I sure did.
Got some musicians up in
there. I sure did. I was actually happy to do that, because this project was made possible by Women's Audio Mission. It was a 1-year grant that I got last June and completed this June. And so when I realized that I would have a nonprofit that was sponsoring 80 hours of time in a huge state-of-the-art studio, I was like, we're not just going to do the sample stuff. We're going to bring some musicians in. And luckily, I found Jazz Mafia, who I did a tribute to Women in Hip Hop show with back in March. And I was like, you know what? I'll do this show with you guys if you promise to get in the studio and jam with me. So that was what happened with Good Music and Not Easy, the last couple tracks.
What was that like working with musicians? Did they come in like, we got the tracks for you? Because that's sometimes how producers do.
Right.
They come in, I got the track for you. And then you just kind of write around that, or they'll give you directions for the vision. I don't know how your process is. I would imagine, like, we are musicians. We came in. We already got stuff. Or you walk in and say, no, this is Rocky Rivera. And Rocky Rivera has a certain vibe, so I need the drum to be on the four.
Right.
I mean, you know, so how did that work?
Well, I think it was a learning experience for everybody. The people that I work with in Women's Audio Mission, they were students as well. They were learning how to mix and master and engineer. And it was a great... So when everybody's pretty transparent about the fact that this is the first time we're doing all this together, I think everybody's really gracious. And there's... I mean, luckily, when I work with an organization like Women's Audio Mission, nobody comes in there with big egos. We're going in there with the spirit of learning and supporting each other.
Okay.
So with Jazz Mafia, they learned my song Pussy Kills. And that's a song that they performed and they composed it.
Right.
So I knew that they could hear a beat and they could replay it. They could write the music down, even if I wasn't familiar with how the notes worked. So what I did was I sent them two songs, two beats.
Okay.
One of them, the producer lost the stems for, so we actually saved that song.
Okay.
And the other was from my label mate, Oteo Dub, from Beat Rock Music. And we were like, let's figure out how we could play this live. So I sent those two songs, and when they came in, They just recorded it in pieces, and they recorded it maybe about six members of Jazz Mafia.
Okay.
They came in one day, and I was there, and I just had them do the beat. And then when they left, I just rapped over the drums.
Okay.
And there's a woman named April. She was so dope. You know, like, all rappers, we rap over the drums. Like, we don't need to hear it, but what I was the most excited about was the horn section.
Okay.
And I've never been able to get a horn section. I'm a huge reggae fan.
Right.
I love dance hall, and I just love brass. I just love the sound
of horns.
And you
didn't have to sample it.
Exactly, and I didn't have to sample it. I mean, it might be a sample of a sample, but it's live.
Right.
So it's really cool. And to see that and to have that be a part of my album was really an amazing process that I learned a lot from.
We're in a building with Rocky Rivera. Why don't you pick a song that you think, you know, the audience is going to get into right now?
Okay, so this song that we're going to play next is called Best Shot, and I just actually did a video for it with my homegirl, Ben Milky. We recorded it all on my iPhone.
Did you do it? iPhone videos?
We sure did.
Okay.
We did it with all the resources we had in hand, and we shot it in my neighborhood of Excelsior District in San Francisco. So
okay.
I'm super proud of it. So this is the song that goes with it.
And what do you want us to listen to when we're hearing this?
You
what
know,
do you want to pay attention to?
Oh, yeah. This is interesting because a lot of people quote me on one particular lyric, and they're quoting me wrong.
Okay.
So this song is really about the struggles of creating music and being an artist and knowing that people in this day and age are on a hype to just call you out over every little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened to me over the course of my career, and it's just a frustration that we don't have this space to let other people grow, especially in the public eye.
Right.
So basically, Best Shot is really like take your best shot. Because
mm-hmm.
My references, everything I talk about is very thorough, and I pride myself on that. So please, please get your facts straight before you come at people and turn the lens and the mirror on yourself and ask yourself, why do you feel the need to call people out when you should be calling people in, as I learned to do as a youth educator in Oakland? You're not going to change people if you don't call them in.
There you go. Here's the song, Best Shot. We're going to be right back.
With precision on my wordplay, after when these herbs say something about my curse words, they just want to pick fights. Say it with your chest, huh? Well, always choose my words right. I'm nobody's archetype, I just speak my truth, yo. Illy with these similes, ready with these metaphors, meta narrative. When I give my testimony, never been a grad school, but master of the ceremony. Never been to Catholic school, and I lost my native tongue. I'm trying to find my way, where the hell I'm coming from. Follow at your own risk, I be on my own path, not the one you waiting for. I'm the one that's late to class. Controversial, the truth is about to hurt you. I hate to disappoint you, and you surely ain't my mama. I'm just trying to tell my story before they try to tell it for me. So excuse me for the language in my music allegory. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best shot. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best shot. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best. Hit me with your best, hit me with your best.
We're back here, Davey D, hanging out with you. The name of the song, Best Shot, is off the album Rocky's Revenge. Rocky Rivera in the building with us.
Hey.
A journalist. You know, I know we've asked this, but I'm going to ask it again. As a journalist, you know, and somebody who's award-winning and been featured a lot for your work in that, is it a big jump for you to go from that to, you know, penning an album? You know, does your writing get in the way, or is there an advantage when you're writing the lyrics?
That's a great question, because I think as writers, and, you know, writers don't get paid a lot of money, whether you're a journalist or whether you're an MC. We always have to kind of be hustlers with our pen. So, right. You know, I used to write bios and used to get paid in hyphy juice. I don't know if you ever knew that, but
no, I didn't know
I
that.
Wrote a bio for Clyde Carson.
And the team. Okay.
But he had just came out with hyphy juice.
Okay.
And literally the next day, because he was like, I need it tonight. If you can expedite that, I will have what you need by tomorrow. The right. next day, somebody knocked on my door with a full case of hyphy juice.
No, so, I didn't know that. Okay.
So I was good off that for a while. But, you know, it just shows you that when you're a writer, you're gonna go where you can and you're going to try to be flexible. So as a journalist, I felt like I had the fundamentals of what it meant to be an MC, but there's a lot of practice of a craft right. there in addition to the writing.
Well, you know, I was once an MC once upon a time back in the days.
What was your MC name? I'd like to
Davey
know.
Davey D.
It was Davey D. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are you anywhere? Can I look you up? Or
there's stuff out there. I don't push it. There are people that will walk and be like, hey, I found some of your stuff.
Next album featuring Davey D.
No, I never put out an album. But the one thing, though, there's a song I did about South Africa before the Artists Against Apartheid that did get some play. So people know that.
Okay.
Big shout out to Osha, you know, who did the beat. So we joke about that. We remember that some back in the days. But the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, I went from MC to journalist.
Right.
You're going from journalist to MC,
right? Right.
So what I'm asking is, like, you know, as a journalist, you know, you've got a lot of detail. I want to put details on, and I tend to write long. And you can't always write long when you're doing a song, you know. So how do you kind of, I don't know if as a journalist, you're dense, you know, like
right.
there's layers
totally.
And layers. Because totally. You can't always do that when you're writing a song.
Yes. So I do tend to get in my own way as a writer, as a classical writer, because, you know, I read a lot and there are things that you can't translate.
Right.
And okay. So pronunciation wise, I had to learn how to drop a lot of the ends of my words.
Okay.
That was something I had to learn from Bam.
Okay.
So he would be like, yes, my partner. So he would read my lyrics and I would be frustrated in the studio, which is the place that I had the least amount of experience. And he would just be like, drop these syllables, don't have a hard R. And so those are things that I learned in terms of translating. But as far as content, in this album alone, I say some real many stuff. Like I say, like, you can check my background for an empirical source. Like, now that is either super.
But that sounds like something Jizzle would say.
Totally. Yes.
Which, by the way, you're one of the claims of fame, the only journalist to this day to interview all members of Wu-Tang at the same time.
Yes, thank you for reminding me about that. That is still pretty cool. I still have the story to my son, who just turned 11, that he was in utero when I met Wu-Tang. So he, in turn, also met Wu-Tang.
Right.
But, I think that as a writer, I'm constantly trying to figure out how can I say the most content with the shortest amount of words with the greatest impact. So it is about editing,
and
self-editing.
That's hard to do.
It's really hard to
do. The people that I think do it the best, and I've asked this question of them as well, is Dead Prez. You know, like...
Like sound bites.
Like, because they're taking complex information.
Right.
And they whittle it down and they manage to get it in there. And you got to keep it funky.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's cool. Some people can have it all there, but then it's like, is your head going to bob to it?
Does it
sound good, you know? And I think Stick and M1 are masters of that. You know, Public Enemy, of course, you know, also good at that. But I think... Because, you know, you listen to Dead Prez's stuff, it's just like, whew.
Oh, definitely.
And then, you know, Black Thought is also good at, you know, but you're talking about elite. You
right,
know.
Exactly.
Talking about the Steph Curry of MCs.
Yeah. Nobody can touch Black Thought. Like, I don't even know how he's able to continue to perform at that level and also be on The Late Show, right?
Yeah.
Is it The Late Show?
Yeah.
Yes.
Jimmy Fallon or whatever.
Yes, and it's just amazing.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this. Let's do this. Why don't we take another listen to one of your songs?
Okay.
What's another song you want to pull out?
Okay. So, what's a good song? Well, we were talking about Jazz Mafia. So let's talk about, and let's play Good Music. Good Music is a good song to play.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Starter, a pack an hour later, listening to 40 water. Yo, I was just a shorty on a mission just to fit in. Paid attention to the language and the lyrics, learning English it was. An introduction to a culture I adore. Since I came to San Francisco at the tender age of 4, I was learning all my lessons through the music. Pardon if my tongue gets twisted, I'm splitting it. So then I sacrificed my native dialect to talking local slang. Hella bae from the beginning. I'm soaking up the game from the culture I adopted when I had to leave my own and survive another continent so far away from home. Learn to pop the slang, kick it with the baddest, for better or for worse, but oftentimes it's problematic. Yo, I could take a hint and play the back if I offend only the utmost when I bless the paper with my pen.
Name of the song is Good Music. We're in the building with Rocky Rivera, celebrating the release of her album, Rocky's Revenge, and just going over a whole lot of things because there's a lot to build with this MC. She is more than just a rapper. She ain't just no ordinary rapper. She got depth to her.
Thank you.
So this is with Jazz Mafia.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, one of the things I want to ask, you know, now that you have a band, does Rocky Rivera go out on tour with a band from now on? Or
You know what? I'm not going to claim that I have a I wish that I had my own band. That's the goal, right? That's the goal. Jazz Mafia is a group of individuals that they kind of are like the amoeba that like rejoins and different people come in. So actually, I don't even know how many people are in the group. It's a collective of musicians.
Like
yes, exactly. And they come in and they come out and they have like Heaviest Feather is the group that actually was the one that performed on my album. So there's a whole bunch of them, but there's just a particular group of six individuals. I believe it's six that were on this album. But the thing that I was able to witness with my label mate, Ruby Ibarra, and her band, the Balik Bayans, was...
She does have a band?
That's her band. Yes, oh. Yes. So that's really amazing because they are doing... we just did a show together at Brick and Mortar in San Francisco, and they're doing another one in L.A. at the Bootleg in January, and it was just amazing to see, first of all Filipino band. To me, is like... Wow, it's so cool to see that. And I'm not saying that that's like, you know, that's a goal to have as far as like, no, we're only going to have.
Funky for you too.
But that's what I'm saying is like the cultural references. That's why Beyonce, you know, her band is like
all women band.
All women band, all people of color, all black folks, actually. And it's to play, knowing that we have historically been left out of the equation for a long time as marginalized people, whether you're a woman artist, a women musician, or people of color. There's a power and there is like an underscore of that. And
right.
And I think that to be able to go on the road as far as to I would love to find a band that, you know, is comprised of the very populations that I feel like I speak to on my particular album.
Right.
And that's something that I'd love to do in the future. But as far as this particular album, I was completely lucky to have a group of individuals that was local and totally supportive as well.
You mentioned Ruby Rivera. I mean,
there you go. There you go. Ibarra. Ibarra. You know what? I got to teach him how to roll his R's and say his.
Yeah, you know. Ruby Ibarra.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, perfect.
The song Us.
Yes.
That was a shot. That was a shot in the dark. That was a shot across the bow. And it brings, you know, a whole bunch of you all as MCs, Filipino, Filipina MCs and poets.
Yes.
Talk about this song, because it's like, I know it's Ruby's song, but it seems like that's a community song at this point.
Yes, completely.
Like, if she's here, I could talk to her. If Homegirl who does the poem is here, we could talk to her about
exactly.
that song.
Exactly.
You're in there, but Us is a, that's like, in many ways, kind of like your all symphony.
It totally
You know, going
is.
Back to Marley Marl and the Symphony,
exactly.
this is like the woman Filipino version of that. So talk about that song and what that was like making it before we play it.
It was a long time coming historically for that song. I mean, You know, I think that the beauty of the song is that the four women, and might I add, three out of four are moms. The four women that are on the song really represent...
Who are all the four?
Yes. Faith Santia, who is an amazing and pioneering Pinay spoken word artist from Los Angeles.
In the middle of that song, she kills it.
Oh, my goodness. So her doing her little piece in there, that's Faith Santia. Classy, who is the youngest of us all, who is, I think she just turned 22. She's out of Echo Park, which is a historic Filipino town in Los Angeles. And then, of course, there's Ruby Ibarra, who had a landmark album this year with Circa 91 and is our newest label mate at Beat Rock Music. And there's myself, who's been in the game 10 years from San Francisco, California, celebrating my 10 years in music with this particular song. It really speaks to the spectrum of where Filipina artists and Filipina hip hop artists have come. And it's so important to me. It is a community song because it's not only just about sisterhood, which sometimes can feel empty for the sake of sisterhood. We're talking about some militant stuff up in there that relate only to what a Pinay can experience. Right. But a lot of people that were not Filipino felt that video too.
Right. And the video.
Yes.
That, I mean, so in the video, you have even more people.
Oh my goodness, we had over 200.
You have
200.
Hopi, you have a whole bunch of people. So yeah, there's a lot of folks in there.
There's a lot of artists in it. Versoul's in it, who also was on that grant with Women's Audio Mission. Hopi Spitzhard, who was my roommate in the Excelsior back in my college days.
We were in a scene. Roommates.
We were roommates. That's something we always like to joke about. Yes. Yeah, so and it had over 200 Pinays, Filipino women, who were called to come to Balboa High School, which was my old high school, actually. Mm-hmm. And they participated in a two-day shoot that just had just so much footage of our cultural history. We're all wearing traditional Filipino and indigenous costumes as we're rapping and trying to really invoke postmodernism, you know, like what does it mean to be a Pinay now? You know, we love to glorify pre-colonialism and all this other stuff, but what does it mean to take that knowledge of self and really aim it true at your enemy, which is what we consider the people that are on the song that we are targeting. So it's not just a song about sisterhood. It's a song about solidarity and knowing who our common enemy was. So,
do you all have a documentary around that making?
There is. It's called Nothing on Us, and it's been making its rounds. Evelyn Obamos, she did the behind the scenes for that, and it's been at a couple of different film festivals all across the country, actually.
Okay, we haven't seen it. You seen that yet, Anita? We ain't seen it yet.
I might have a link, so I'll send it along.
Rocky coming here with documentaries, holding out on us.
Well, you know, I had to come with some gifts, but but we'll send you that link later on.
Okay, so let's listen to the song "Us." I love this song, and we'll come back talk with Rocky Rivera.
Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us. Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us. Isang bagsak, sit up for story arc. If it don't involve no matriarch, some mothers work from the ground up. They craft an air like ATR with the butterflies leaves. Naka Philippine dana, pag nagsalita mga banatay bala. Wag magtaka kung ako ay makatabulok na sistema. Kurakot sa pera, bagsak. But we putting our heart into darkness. They putting these pigs in the office. Oh, you thinking you schooling, but you hella lost, cause you best see the boss while I top this. But look at my eyes, that she moving so cold. Can't hold a calendar, her when she glow. Flick at the wrist, but that ilaw she hold. Panagos sa ilaw, she dripping in gold. We pulling up in a jeepney. All of my soldiers greet me. Hand me bandanas and pull back my hammer. It's warfare when you see me. Skin you alive for my country. I live and die for my country. I kill a pig in a white hooded suit on the low for my country. They got evil plans in the devil's hands, but I don't pray cause I organize. They got new ways to impose strength, but I teach mine how to mobilize. They don't fight for the money, for the greedy, for the white man. All we want is our freedom and the right to live on our motherland. I live
golden woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us, nothing on us. Island woman rise, walang makakatigil. Brown, brown woman rise, alamin ang yung ugat. They got nothing on us, nothing on us.
We're back here. Landmark song. You know, and again, I say this is like the symphony is like one of the classic hip-hop posse songs.
Right.
Where that's like the first one that everybody's like, damn, look at all them people. You know, all-star cast.
Yeah.
You know, Biz Markie, the Big Daddy Kane, the Master Ace, Marley Marl produced it. And, you know, people have always tried to recapture that. Wu-Tang did it when they came with everybody.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
This is like... you know, the Panay version of that.
Yes,
you know, like
I love
everybody
that.
Came together and did your thing. And and what's her name? Faith?
Faith Santia.
Yeah,
yes.
I love her at the beginning.
Yes,
you know,
completely.
When you drop the music out, and it's like, no, you're going to hear my voice.
Oh, yes.
You're
going
to hear what I got to say.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Like I said, we are all artists in our own right. And, you know, when you only have a certain amount of bars to make an impact,
right.
You really come with your best.
Was
and
she feeling that when she did that? Or did she know it was going to have that impact?
I'm not sure because, you know, Faith also is one of those artists that, you know, she started off really young and she was making her rounds and she actually has
a
lot as a poet and
yeah.
She was on a couple commercials. She's really close with the Living Legends dudes. Like she's
oh, okay.
a part of that history, not just spoken word or Filipino history. She's a part of hip hop history.
Right.
But, you know, she had her daughter and then she had her kid and she, you know, she did what many mom artists tend to do, which is she had to choose between supporting her family and being an artist. So the fact that her poems have stood the test of time and she's working on some new poems right now and to actually record it, because you know when you do spoken word it's for the moment.
Right.
You can't really we're beyond that time of like the year 2000 where everybody was doing spoken word, you know.
Right.
Which I feel like she launched a lot of imitators, and she was really one of the people who started off that style
yeah.
of spoken word. But now that she's coming back as an OG and as somebody who's been in the game, she still hasn't lost that freshness because she is, it's still relevant. It's like when you hear Pac, keep your head up.
Right.
It's still relevant. When you talk about the people and when you talk about the issues that we go through, it's always going to be relevant. So it's amazing just to hear her with a new generation of fans that Ruby has
right.
also exposed to our music.
And Ruby, she flips the bilingual all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
she's trilingual because
yeah.
she can speak Tagalog. She can speak Waray, which is a dialect.
Okay.
And she can obviously speak English and she can rap in all three.
And
so I'm
like
jealous.
She's like a chemist or something, ain't she?
She's a scientist.
Scientist. Well,
yeah.
No. So what is it with all these women MCs? Let's go through the list.
Right.
Hopi, your roommate, is a lawyer.
She's a lawyer, practicing family law.
Right. You're a journalist.
Yes.
And an educator.
Yes.
Faith, I think, is an educator, right?
Faith is, she's a union rep on Hollywood
rep.
Movies.
Okay.
Yes.
What? Okay.
Yes.
For somebody that, okay, so there you have it. Psalm 1. Right.
Right.
Is a chemist.
And I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she oh yeah, she'll let
oh,
you know
wow.
in a minute. Like, you know, I'm just
a chemist.
I'm a chemist. That's why
wow.
I keep thinking because when Ruby's like, I'm a scientist, I'm thinking chemist.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, so what is this? Everybody got these like, you know, extra jobs.
Extra yeah, we have these jobs because A, music don't pay.
Right.
And B, it's a labor of love, really, in more ways than one. So that's why a lot of the times we push to make these women more visible because a lot of us don't have the luxury of doing this full time.
Right.
And we got degrees, you know,
right.
like Hopi has a law degree from Hastings.
Yeah.
You know, I have a bachelor's in journalism from San Francisco State. And so we have a backup plan and we need one because there is no stability in music. And really, we
so
don't
you,
do it for the money, but it would be nice
right.
with all
so,
the work
so
that
you
we
don't
do.
Have a, you don't have a Maybach waiting for you outside.
Oh yeah. I'm in the Bay Area. So my rent costs a Maybach. So y'all feel yeah. me out there.
I hear you on that. Well, you know, we're going to get ready to close out this album. You know, what's the extra plans for it? You
well,
know,
I'm definitely
you're going to do a documentary, you're going to tour or what?
Yes, I'm actually I'm in the Bay Area, so I'm looking and looking for folks that really want to support not just women of color, but moms. That Fung, who did the artwork, is a mom, and we really want to take this on the road. So I've been applying for a lot of grants. And
you want to do a mom tour?
We want to do a mom tour. We want to have a Sprinter van with cribs and milk on ice.
You know, there was a bunch of us, you know, that are in hip hop. You know, you included, that all kind of had kids around the same time. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was really interesting was nobody could go to shows late anymore.
Oh,
and somebody
God.
Had
Tell
the good idea to do a day show.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, day show. And everybody showed up. Rico
right.
Pabon showed up. We showed up. Thy and I showed up. Everybody brought their kids because, you know, by 5 o'clock, we was all out of there.
Exactly.
Like, all right, got to go home,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
So it seems like maybe you all need to do that with your mom tour. Like,
oh,
you know,
I'd love
do
to.
These things like it's going to be the daycare party.
Exactly. Because it ain't revolutionary unless you got childcare, right?
Yeah. People forget that.
Yes, that's a very important part of why women have a wage gap. We have
right.
the motherhood penalty, and this is no different in the music industry. And so people who actually are out there, moms who do it, like I said, 3 out of 4 of us on that Us song are
right.
moms. We do it because we want to make visible that it's possible, that yeah. that when women have children, especially, that we don't just want to go away quietly. We
right.
want to be able to show you, like I did in my video for Best Shot, that we're still here and we need to contribute, because I wasn't a feminist until I became a mom, truly.
Right. But also society needs to adopt.
Exactly. And
we need to adopt, like
exactly.
you said, like when people do the meetings and they're like, yeah, show up at 4 o'clock or, you know, 9 o'clock at night. It's like, yo, we got kids. You know?
Oh, yeah, we snuck out of that show together.
That's
because
right.
we were
yeah, we was at the Talib show. Me
oh,
and me
man.
And yeah, we was at the Talib show the other night, and
it was getting late.
You killed it.
Thank
and
you.
And Talib was a little late, and we were both looking at the watch, like, you know, it is
right.
like it's 10:30,
right.
and everybody else was like, "Yo, you ain't gonna hang around." It's like, nah, it's 10:30.
We got to get back to the babies,
yeah.
so we can rap. We you know what I mean? Like, we ain't got to kick it all night. We can still continue to make music. And I do want to go on a mom tour, and I would love to have folks involved and to come out and say, hey, do we need to do a daytime show? How can we change Tech Writers to make it more mom friendly? How can we change venues to make it more mom friendly?
Yeah.
And what can we do to support moms and working artists of color in a way of solidarity in systems that aren't just tokenizing?
Yeah, I would love to see the type of shows where you bring your kids in it. Hear the space, and they're going to be, you know, taught. They're going to have activities
right.
they can play.
Yes.
The parents can kind of network and, you know, do what they need to do, enjoy the show, and everybody can leave.
Exactly.
You know.
Because we got it all taken care of. And,
yeah.
I do think that in more ways than one, in more industries than one, we need to be more accommodating to families. Because
absolutely.
They're really who raised the children, right? And I have 2 children that I'm lucky to have been raised backstage with
right.
their little ear noise canceling earmuffs.
Okay.
You know, they're going to be growing up with a community of folks that we want to be not just supportive of why we do this, but in solidarity, and to show other young moms that
right.
it's and dads that it's possible to make music that is revolutionary and counter, you know, it's basically like counter capitalist and subversive and powerful without having to compromise to industry standard. And it's possible with the help of folks who are listening right now, folks like JVD. It's possible as long as you know that that's what we're here for, to support that.
Tupac on this one?
Tupac is
you
not
had,
on
you
this
had,
one.
You had,
yeah.
you had the song Wake Up where you put it on. You are...
Oh,
you
know
ride
I got,
hard for Tupac.
You know I got 2 Tupac references. I start off Best Shot with Picture Perfect. I paint a perfect
That's
picture.
Right.
Yes,
yes,
I always have my hidden Tupac references in there. I think there's 2 of them.
Okay.
One of them is In My Line, which is about friendship, which is Tupac is one of the other only rappers that talks about friendship.
Okay.
And this one, it says, never had a friend like me in that song. So if you real Rocky fans know that I always have a little Tupac Easter egg in all of my raps.
Okay.
So thank you for noticing that, because Davey D is one of the few people who I'm so jealous of that was able to interview Tupac while he was still alive. Forever be jealous
yeah.
of you for that.
Oh, don't be. But he was good peoples, you know. Definitely good peoples.
But thanks for bringing that up.
So what are we going to end off on?
Let us Yeah, let's do Am I Lying. That is a banger. That is something that talks about friendship. It actually has a little Oprah clip in there because, you know, I love me some Oprah as a journalist. She is one of my idols. And it's just one of those fun songs that, like, a lot of people, you know, when you get older, you think that you're going to have these friends for life. And sometimes they don't work out that way. People are shady. So this is the one that you play
okay.
when you're in your car, frustrated. You want it. A lot of my music is like that. It's very cathartic. So okay. this is the banger, but it's also the one that I think I'm probably going to.
So
shoot
you know
a video
everybody's going to listen to it and be like, oh. I wonder who she's talking mm-hmm. about.
You do your research.
You know?
I'm not going to snitch.
You don't hang with so and so. You're going to be looking at that. Right?
That's another interview. We ain't got time for that. But I'm gonna let people listen to it and put two and two together. But that's just a really fun song.
Okay,
that it's. Real. I'm not lying in it, so listen to it.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. I want to thank Rocky Rivera. Check her out on Beat Rock Records. Check out her album, Rocky's Revenge. And be on the lookout for the upcoming Moms Tour when that happens. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
I had to do a clearing in my life of some people whose energy I realized was not supportive of who I wanted to be in the world. So not only are you responsible for the energy that you bring, you're also responsible for the energy that you surround yourself with.
See, I'm taking applications for a new crew. All them plus water dry, they don't suit.
Man, they don't suit.
Had fun with them, yeah, maybe used to.
Maybe used
but
to.
They colors showing through and it ain't true.
No, blue. It ain't true.
You see,
blue.
These people always had their own agenda. Talking shit to your face, say your best friend, bruh. Don't let nobody start talking when you lead,
when you lead,
see
though.
If they defend your name and shut it down,
shut
yo.
It down,
and
yo.
If they don't, better cut them off. 9 out of 10, they want your plug. 1 out of 3 just want your life. How many folks is calling you cuz? But cuz never show love when it got real. And cuz only hit you when you close that deal. So I don't give a fuck, blood or not. Right here's where the buck's gonna stop.
This is DJ Love Jones, producer of the world-famous Confessional and DJ for Necropolis, starting every Sunday, midnight to 3 a.m. I want to personally invite you to come on out to the Clinton Street Theater on Thursday, February 21st, starting at 7 p.m. Contessa de la Luna, host of the world-famous Confessional, will be live on stage reading your secrets and confessions prior to the movie. There'll be prizes, prizes, prizes. Come on out for a fun evening that benefits your community radio station, KBOO. That's Blazing Saddles, Thursday, February 21st, starting at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. See you there.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell. What did jazz artists Christian Scott Atunde Adjua, Pharoah Sanders, Steve Turay, Terrence Blanchard, and Marcus Strickland have in common? 1, they are all performing at this year's PDX Jazz Festival. And 2, they have all been featured on my program, Jazz in the New Millennium. Each one-hour episode focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective. The weekly show is syndicated nationally.